Do not give up that good fight, ladies and gentlemen. Tens of millions of us, I hope, knocking on wood here, will be taking to the streets to give America a big, great, big, huge hug of love tomorrow as true patriots, folks that believe in democracy. I will be there speaking at Milwaukee's No Kings rally tomorrow at Cathedral Square. I will be defending the rule of law, not just for Democrats, not just for Republicans, but for all of us. And it is certainly a privilege to be joined this afternoon by the former Assistant Secretary for Commerce and Economic Development, the first woman of color to hold that position. She's worked in three presidential administrations. She's also a lawyer. Alejandra Castillo, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. I really appreciate you spending time with us.
Maggie, I'm so excited. First of all, I'm honored to be on the show. I love your energy. I love your candor. And I also love how you explore these really tough issues, but that we must start to think, not only start to think about, but really think deeply about, because it does impact us economically, but it also impacts the soul of our country, our democracy.
I was just going to say, Alejandra, one of the troubling things for me is that my heart hurts every day. And it breaks for not just Democrats or progressives or immigrants or undocumented people. It breaks for folks that believed that Donald Trump was going to do these things, that believe in the continuing sort of spewing of untruths about our country. You and I were speaking right before we got on air about your background and how you came into public service. And it has such resonance to the moment that we find ourselves in today as Americans of every political persuasion. I was wondering if you could just share a bit of your background and how you came to serve our country for decades.
Sure. So I am the daughter of two immigrants from the Dominican Republic who left the Dominican Republic right about 1959, 1960, fleeing a dictatorship, knowing that there was something better for them and that the U.S. really provided them that. My father was a small business owner in the Bronx in one of the toughest times. So it not only taught me about loving our country and our democracy and the rule of law, but also understanding how small business owners change a community. And that's where my love for both the law and economics, just like you, really flourished. And being able to serve my country, our country, at the highest level is I always saw it as the most complete honor. And it doesn't come without sacrifice. I mean, the civil servant corps are extraordinary individuals, experts in their fields who are doing the work, not for the pay, but because they believe that our country can be better. So if I sound a bit patriotic, it's because I am. And because right now my heart hurts and I worry.
Yeah, I hear all of that. It's why I come from a family of public servants and veterans, and that's just been so deeply ingrained. And there's something that I say in the opener for my show is that no one is entitled to these positions. No elected official is entitled to these positions. And the most grounding value, sort of the litmus test, if you will, if there ever should be one, for, and I consider this for both elected officials and public servants at the highest level, is are you showing up from a place of humility with the commitment to serve the public, no matter what people's political preferences are? And every day that I hear the president or the vice president or other leaders in his cabinet talk about targeting Democrats and civil service, talking about targeting Democrat programs, when the reality is, when we look at the ACA, for example, and you look at ACA enrollment, 45% of ACA enrollees are Republicans, 35% are Democrats, you got 10% independents, and then other. But it is primarily helping folks that are Donald Trump supporters, and yet we're at this crisis point where all Democrats are trying to ask for is to restore the ACA subsidies to keep people from seeing their healthcare premiums purchased through the exchanges double, triple, and simply become unaffordable. You have incredible background and experience in dealing with these issues on a national policy scale. how critical is this moment? And besides just the brinksmanship of it and trying to use power for power's sake, which is the most despicable way that an elected official can operate, what I cannot figure out what the rationale for Republicans is to oppose these subsidies to keep healthcare affordable.
Look, I will be very honest. You know, I spent a few decades in Washington, D.C., and I recently moved to the Midwest, or what I call the heartland, because I wanted to understand what makes America tick, what is happening in our country. And it is still very puzzling, but I will tell you that as we get closer to that November 1st date, people are beginning to understand it's not just that other person who's going to have these premiums, you know, skyrocket. It's also hitting their families. I just had a colleague today tell me that her elderly father had to pay a copayment for a Zoom medical because even that is being charged. We are going to see, unfortunately, how healthcare costs will rise in a way that we won't be able to negotiate 2 months from now. It is happening today. These premiums are going to rise. As you have noted, this ugly bill the big brutal bill was a tax break for the billionaires, not for the middle class, the consumer class. That is the portion of our population that makes this economy turn. So this is real. I think the Democrats have not only picked the moment and the issue to fight for, and it's going to be a long haul because, as you know, there's no negotiations happening, right? The House has not been in session.
None in good
possible.
None in good faith, certainly. When you look at the numbers here, the sheer scale of this problem and the fact that the ACA subsidy is just a tiny piece of this catastrophe that is clearly visible on the horizon, that is nearly entirely, if not wholly, to be blamed on Republicans. A healthcare crisis in this country that is, again, epic in proportions. Folks looking at premium increases of 100%+ in Wisconsin. There are 313 Wisconsinites that are obtaining insurance through the marketplaces. We have seen at least one of our major nonprofit healthcare carriers drop out of the marketplace because they didn't file rate changes for this upcoming 2026 year that were anywhere near the 30%+ rate increases we saw from a for-profit health insurance companies. And as a result of that, we're going to see even more health increases, more nonprofit carriers dropping out because their risk pools are just riskier, fewer lives insured with greater health needs, that equals more risk. And 30,000 Wisconsinites could be priced out of ACA insurance completely. Alejandra, setting aside the continued work that we need to do to fix healthcare in the United States, which is largely derived from this falsehood that healthcare should somehow be a for-profit business when we all need it. What do you think is going to come next? I mean, these numbers are shocking. What do you think the off-ramp is here? Is there going to be some deal cut? I've heard cynically from a handful of Republicans, oh, we might extend the subsidies for a year, which they would simply do to get over the midterms and not have to answer to their constituents. What's the off-ramp here? How are we going to get through this?
Look, I really believe the off-ramp is going to rely on us as participants of this democracy, right? If you haven't called your member of Congress, you need to. We need to make sure that our voices are as loud as possible because our representatives need to hear what is happening in real time on the ground in terms of our loved ones, as well as the broader healthcare system. You know, we're talking about the cost, but if you've been tracking what's happening at HHS with regards to the CDC, right?
Yes.
This argument on vaccines, we have a looming healthcare crisis that is not just about cost, cost. It's also about accessibility. It's also about whether or not we're even able to bring in the most cutting edge innovation. When we take into account the multitude of decisions that this administration has made and you add it up, you know, the off-ramp can only be individuals like you and I and others calling on members of Congress and demanding that both the White House and Congress begin to negotiate a real solution, not a Band-Aid.
Not a Band-Aid, a real solution. We're going to have to take care of a couple of messages in just a moment. Madam Assistant Secretary, what is your take on Speaker Johnson's brinksmanship over failing to swear in Adelita Grijalva? It seems to me there's this shadow political issue going on about trying to avoid the discharge motion to force the release of the full Epstein files. It seems like such a terrible look for the speaker, and yet he's going to the mat on this. What does he think is going to happen when she eventually gets sworn in, which will have to happen?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's painful to see what's happening to Alita Grijalva. I worked with her father. Her father was an extraordinary statesman who cared about the environment and natural resources. So it is a ridiculous play that the speaker is doing, because eventually it must happen, right?
It must happen. That is where we're at. We're going to come back with Madam Assistant Secretary she's worked in three different presidential administrations. She is a lawyer. She is an expert on this moment that we sit in. She is also the Fall 2024 Institute of Politics Fellow at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. And Jacob, if you could just get a tiny piece of sound for us right now, as we're going into our messages and before we come back, I just wanted to make this sound resonate in everyone's ears for discussion when we come back. This is Cut 58. This is Mike Johnson on CNBC. We've got the ACA. 20 plus million Americans get their insurance from the ACA. Those premiums are going up, folks. Here's what Mike Johnson has to say about that.
Republicans have said, repeal and replace, and it's like we're in a wilderness. Republicans are in the wilderness on what to do to try to
no,
fix
actually,
our healthcare.
Actually, we're not. We've got pages and pages and pages of ideas on how to reform healthcare. You can't rip Obamacare out at the roots. It's too deeply ingrained now, and that's the problem. No one's talking about repealing and replacing Obamacare.
Oh, yeah. Does that remind you of this bit of sound, the concepts of a plan over healthcare? This is Cut 60, Jacob.
Yes or no, you still do not have a plan.
I have concepts of a plan.
Yes or no, you still do not have a plan.
I have concepts of a plan.
Yes or no, you still do not have a plan.
Republicans, no plan for American healthcare. We keep talking about our plan next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.